KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. I am Joe, and with me is...
Caleb.
And Jason.
That's right. We're back. It's Monday again. We're here. We're live at KSU. We're here to inject some geek into you.
Woohoo!
Hey, that kind of rhymed a little
bit. Yeah, that was a nice rhyme there.
And could be some strange phrasing. But anyway,
yeah.
How have you gents been doing?
Been doing well. Had a fairly chill weekend, which was nice. Got to enjoy some fine food out in Berkeley area at La Mediterrane. It's a fantastic restaurant with some friends.
Nice.
And then we had delightful ice cream at EC. I got Earl Grey ice cream again. Mm-hmm. It is so good. Like, seriously, so good.
Does it actually taste like Earl Grey?
Yes, it does. In a good way.
Picard would be... Would Picard be happy?
He would. He might prefer a slightly stronger Earl Grey flavoring, which I would have as well, but it would not disappoint in terms of it being Earl Grey ice cream.
He'd prefer it with a little bit of spice, so it would be Earl Grey hot still, or no?
I see what you did there, but I'm not sure. It'd be a different direction, I think, than the confectioners were going for. But that was kind of one of the highlights, and then just took it easy the rest of the time, which was good. It's a good relaxing weekend.
Nice.
How about yourself?
Let's see. I watched a movie called Bone Tomahawk.
I thought I saw that.
It was a film that I had mentioned as one of the new releases a little while back. And I guess it came out in the theater, for a little bit, and then also on demand or something.
See, I was a little bit afraid because the only thing I've heard about it is do not watch Bone Tomahawk.
It was fine. I mean, it wasn't anything incredible. I mostly, the reason why I watched it is because Kurt Russell's in it and it was a Western.
Understandable.
So I was like, okay, I'll check this out. It's on Amazon. Might as well. So yeah, it's like, it has some decent performances and some interesting dialogue, but like the story is just kind of, it's just one of those, I wasn't like, oh, that was a complete waste of my time, but I wasn't like, oh, man, I can't wait to, like, you know, turn around and show this to everybody or watch it again. It was just one of those kinds of movies.
Fair enough. How about you, Jason?
Let's see. I had some fun for the first time messing around with buying things on Steam.
Okay.
I basically haven't had the ability to play any sort of decent video games for a long time because I didn't have a video card on my computer, and I figured my money was probably better spent elsewhere since I'm a fan of the consoles and whatnot. But I ended up doing a little bit of research and found out that my computer actually can run a lot of games without a video card. So, I had no idea, but I guess it makes sense. I mean, computers are getting crazy powerful, even though they're pretty small and whatnot. But yeah, basically anything from last gen, like area of graphics, I can run without any problem, without any sort of video card whatsoever. which I was very happy about. So I ended up picking up Transistor, which I'd been a little bit unhappy about it being a more or less PlayStation exclusive for a long time, but it's also available on Steam, so grab that. And I also grabbed a dirt cheap copy of Skullgirls, and I've been having a lot of fun messing around with that also.
Okay. Cool. Sounds like we partook of some various forms of entertainment. Mm-hmm.
Quite the spread, yeah.
Yeah, be they in the real world or on a screen of some kind.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So yes, we have a wonderful show for you tonight. We have a return of a certain corner of someone's. We'll make it the presence known soon.
It's Kalibs.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Oh, you'll find out. And of course, we have our, you know, continuing of the watch party, the next episodes 5 and 6, I believe, right? And the news and everything else that you come to expect from Robots Attack. And of course, we can't do the show without you.
Well, not really. And we would much prefer it when you participate. If you go to Facebook.com/RobotsAttackShow or Twitter.com/RobotsAttackMe. We have them up in the background. We will shout out to you if you shout out to us. It's good times. People give their feedback about things they're hearing, we're saying, or that they have seen that relate to what we're talking about. It's fun. And we much prefer it when you join in with us. So please do.
Yeah, that's super easy too. Of course, if you're driving, don't do any of that stuff. You can wait till later.
Right. Yeah, and it's especially helpful tonight since we're actually, Caleb and I are splitting one microphone, so if we can get a little bit of extra stuff to keep things moving a little bit more smoothly than us fighting over the microphone, that would help also.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like you might need to adjust that mic somehow.
Yeah.
To make it a little easier for you guys.
Well, we'll have to figure something out in one of the music breaks.
Yeah. But I think... Are you ready to turn it over to your corner?
Let's do it.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
That's right. It's my a little time where I take over the microphone for a little while. And I'm going to give you all a brief introduction to something that Joe will be talking a little bit more about later on, which is the upcoming Deadpool feature. For those who don't know, this is one of Marvel's characters, one of their sort of star properties nowadays. Anyways, the character was created early '90s. Can't remember the exact day off the top of my head right now, but he was part of the X. He became part of the X-Force. He is mutant, sort of via science as opposed to via natural selection, like most of the others are. He is related to the Weapon X project. So if you happen to see that unfortunate film, Wolverine Origins, you saw an early version of him, and that is not the version of Deadpool you'll be seeing in the movie, although it is still being portrayed by the same actor.
Thank you.
Yes, Jason is very grateful for this, as am I.
And who? What's the Deadpool's name?
The actor or the...
The character.
The character's name is Wade Wilson.
There you go.
Alliteration. Yes, yes. Stanley did love his alliteration. the character was created by Rob Liefeld when he created when he was working on the X-Men titles. And the Deadpool's...
You mean Liefeld, the master of anatomy?
Well, a form of anatomy. I'll leave that as an exercise for the viewers. Go look up Rob Liefeld on the internet and under Google image search, and you'll find some interesting pictures. They're not bad. They're just anatomy is a different stylized statement.
He makes action looking characters really well. That they may not be accurate, but they look actiony.
That's one of his strong suits. It's sort of like the Michael Bay thing. It looks really cool, even if it's not 100% accurate.
Can you guys angle it like there and turn it that way, the mic? So it's easier for you guys. So you both can just... Yeah, and then can you angle it up? No, the mic.
Well, this is about as good as it's probably going to get for a little while anyways.
Yeah. That way you guys can both just, when you want to talk, you can just lean in and you can lean in instead of grabbing it from each other. I know we're breaking like the fourth wall on radio, but
it was like 15 walls falling over right now. Anyways,
behind the scenes. Wow.
This is how sausage is made, folks. No, not really. The title character is also Deadpool is his operative name. He also goes by the title The Merc with the Mouth. So he's somewhere between if you took the surliness of Wolverine and the wisecracks of Spider-Man, mashed them together with a little dose sprinkling of the Joker in there, you get something kind of like Deadpool. In the comics, he's one of his more famous features is that the little like dialogue bubbles that show up in a panel to give you internal monologues, he actually can see those. He knows they're there, and he enjoys their presence and misses them when they're gone.
Yeah. So yeah, speaking of fourth wall, because yeah, I didn't mention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons he joined up with the program was to hopefully find a cure for his cancer, which is kind of one of the impetuses for things going forward. Since he's a mercenary, merc with a mouth, he has quite the collection of unusual friends, people that you don't necessarily want to associate with, but one of the heroes he meets is since they work with the X-Men universe, Colossus makes an appearance, and you may recognize Colossus from some of the earlier films. This one's full-grown Colossus. He's not the kid version anymore. The motion capture was done by a different actor, but and they have a different person doing the voice. So we shall see how that all goes. One of the more interestingly named characters besides Deadpool himself is Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and it's not just a song made popular by a punk band in the 80s. It is also a young girl that can produce the force of an atomic blast from within her own body. So, you know, there's that. All things considered, the main focus is obviously Deadpool. And Deadpool is kind of a very unique, mentally unstable human being, mutant creature thing. His joys in life are simple, and they involve lots of money and lots of mayhem. So the feature looks like it will be following closely in the footsteps of the comics, which is nice, since
that's what I kind of wonder, like seeing the trailer, like it doesn't look like he's full on like kind of what everyone comes to know as Deadpool yet. Like, I'm curious, like, mm-hmm. to see, like, there's like little elements, but it still seems like he's something about, you know, trying to get his girlfriend back, and he's just from going from the trailers, it doesn't seem like he's that full on like crazy quote unquote Deadpool yet. Maybe maybe there's more of that like in the actual film, but yeah. I want to go back to the cancer thing. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of not a lot of like superhero that I can think of deal with like things like that, as far as they're usually like, oh, I got these powers, and now like it's Spider-Man, I was bit by an atomic spider, and now I have these powers. Like,
mm-hmm.
I can think of Shadowhawk had like HIV, it was HIV positive. Like, mm-hmm. it's interesting seeing like some of the superheroes that are actually have like diseases or effects that we sort of know about, and like how they
right.
kind of deal with them, instead of just like, oh, I like. I'm Superman, and I have like, I don't know. Feel free to jump in, and mm-hmm. you know, but like,
yeah. Well, and it's that's actually one of Marvel's trademarks, or one of the things that they do better in some ways, is that they have a lot of sort of social and more human sort of basis in some of their characters, like you know, like I said, the with Dark Hawk and
Shadowhawk.
Shadowhawk, sorry, and
Dark Hawk was Marvel, Shadowhawk's Image.
That's right. I had the Hawks confused.
It's okay. Nobody knows who they are.
It's true. They are both, unfortunately, little known characters. But the new Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, like, it's dealing with the social pressures of trying to be a hero and fit in, as well as being from a different culture base than the one you are living in. But to get back to your point, humanizes these otherwise unrelatable characters in a lot of ways, because, you know, with Deadpool, like, you see what the things he does, and you're like, that shouldn't be possible, or like, this guy is obviously not entirely there, but at the same time, like, because of the way he operates and the way his mind works, he is able to accomplish things, as well as deal with the fact that he's, well, constantly trying to fight off a disease that's trying to ravage his body. And it's like, it's an interesting kind of give and take, and sort of like, how would one deal with the fact with that? Like, you know, it's a nice kind of look into a psychology of a character.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely curious to see how they handle all the fourth wall breaking, and, you know, will it end up going over too much, or will they do it just right? Like,
yeah. And there's been some speculation about exactly what some of the dialogue will be since he has a full face mask.
Yeah.
There's been some speculation that, like, they may have done, like, recorded, like, tons and tons of different voice over lines for some of these scenes. And then maybe we'll cherry pick the best reactions based on audiences and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how it actually comes together, because it's such a strange property to try and bring to the film in some ways.
Yeah,
because it works. It's like so ideal. The construction of the character is so ideally suited to comic books that making a movie of it is kind of interesting.
Yeah, hopefully they can pull it off. And yeah, the mask thing too is interesting, because a lot of times they don't want to cover up the actor's face completely, you know, like, oh, I need to be able to see the eyes, to see the emotions, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Stallone in the original Dread movie.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, his mouth.
Yeah. The thing is interesting about that, I heard people talking about, like, some of the behind the scenes stuff of how they animated Deadpool, and, like, actually, certain sections of his mask are actually going to be CGI enhanced.
Oh, nice.
And what they did is they actually, like, put gaps in the makeup or the makeup mask that they put on Ryan Reynolds, who is portraying the character. And so his eye, the space around his eyes, like, so most of his expression will still be captured on film.
Cool.
So that they can go back and say, okay, he made these motions with his face, so let's replicate or accentuate them when we put him in the mask, so that he's still, like, in the comics, like, Deadpool's face is very, very, very expressive.
Yeah.
And that would be nigh impossible in reality to accomplish.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, definitely using the tech to be able to do that now. The face captures and stuff in games and everything, with the little dots everywhere and getting all the expressions. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's cool too that they were willing to, like, go with that too, and not try and think of a way of, like, he doesn't wear a mask, so we don't cover Ryan Reynolds' face. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Like in Spider-Man 3, and Venom's face is out there. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, that wasn't one of the only problems.
You can't cover Topher Grace's face. I mean, that's where the money is right there.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the money, want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio? You can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org, or tune in on the radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip:
you can find our station faster by searching for our call letters, KSCU.
That's right. So, anything else, or we wrap up the Deadpool?
I think that should give you a taste of what it'll be like to sampling what the character will be. Hope you all give the movie a chance and go check it out.
Yeah, there's actually one last little tidbit that's nothing that has ever been confirmed 100% from the people involved, but if you connect the dots, it makes a lot of sense. Basically, when Liefeld ended up creating the character, at the time, the Teen Titans series was doing really, really well, and he was a gigantic fan of it himself, and he was well known as being a gigantic fan of it.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, the bad guy in that was Deathstroke.
Mm.
And so when it came time for him to put together a team of his own, some people had raised eyebrows when he created a character that was a mercenary who was armed with both automatic weapons and swords. of course, from there, the characters ended up diverging by quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that seed most likely actually came from Deathstroke.
That's it's cool. Slade versus Wade. I'm sure there's a few.
Right, yeah.
There's more than a few parallels that can be drawn, but as time has advanced, the relation between the two of them is tenuous at best.
Yeah. Now, for the comic, I mean, he's, would you say Deadpool is sort of in the middle? Like, as far as good guys over here, bad guys over here, is he kind of in the middle? Or?
He stands in the middle, and I think he leans chaotic. If you were to pick a D&D alignment, he's he definitely will go for the biggest. He loves spectacle, and he loves excitement. And the more of it he can get, the better he feels about everything, and the more money that all gets him, the happier he is. So he definitely leans towards chaotic. He's now part of the Avengers in the comics, so I think so. His heroism has probably been upped a bit, but the Deadpool squad that he initiated in an earlier series still exists and does their work. So I don't think he's gonna give up being the merc with a mouth anytime soon.
Yeah, I'll be curious too. How the film, if the film touches on the money aspect much to it, since they seem to be playing this revenge/rescue of his girlfriend angle, at least according to the trailers.
Yeah.
We all know trailers can be deceiving, so.
Yes. But. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. The early reports that I hear from a lot of people are positive, so.
Cool. All right, well, let's take a music break, and then we'll come back with our watch party. We'll talk about episodes 5 and 6 of The Devil's a Part-Timer. Mm-hmm, so we'll give you all a chance to participate in that as well, since you're watching it with us. Let us know what you thought of the episodes. And, of course, your thoughts on Deadpool as well, if you have any other little history or tidbits you want to throw out there, any favorite issues, favorite storylines, that sort of thing, that maybe you hope the movie touches on, or future sequels if it does well, types of things. But
yeah,
all right, let's take that music break, and then we'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KACU Santa Clara.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook and check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. We are now in Watch Party. Devil's a Part-Timer, episode 5 and 6.
Woohoo!
So, let us start off with episode 5.
We get to meet Lucifer, who isn't the devil, as confusing as that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting artifacts of this show that all the names of the characters are all different names for the devil, but they're not the devil.
Yeah.
Who is still not the devil. So it's all sorts of meta confusing, but it's a lot of fun.
So the end of episode 4, he drops, he's right there, bam, he's using magic, and we're like, whoa, what the heck is going on? And then we get our explanation in episode 5.
Yes, we do. Part of it is that he brought over one of the holy men from the church as a sort of a proxy or pawn for the situation, and that the Lucifer can channel the fear and anguish of humans into magical energy.
And then it seems like that's pretty much how Mal's doing it too. Like, in
it
a
sounds
sense,
like the demons across the board. That's kind of how they work.
Pretty much how they do it. So it's it was interesting. Like it's like, oh, okay, so that's how, like, I don't know. I guess I was kind of hoping for something a little different, but it works. I mean, it's okay. Like, okay, that's fine. But then this introduces the thing with the priest. So there's some sort of like kind of conspiracy thing going on or something like that. I mean, I know there's a little bit more to it in the next episode, but it gets basically dropped in this one. Like, what is it? Is it Alba or Olda? Olba? The priest's name?
Olba's close enough.
But, okay. Yeah, because they ask, like, oh, why are you two guys working together? And there's some sort of, like, I'm trying to remember exactly. There was some sort of thing, though, with the church, and there's some sort of conspiracy thing, like, yeah, they want to...
They don't go into too much detail about it, but it sounds like it's either a faction within the church that is... wanting to retake power for themselves, or trying to control to assert greater control over both the demons and the angels.
Yeah, it sounds like also that they may have felt a little bit threatened by having the... Once they'd kind of beaten the demons, that having this big angelic power that everybody would be looking towards for whatever, that they were uncomfortable with that. And so getting rid of both sides was something that was appealing for them. And so that they could end up, after all of the calamity, swoop in and take control over everything. And I thought it was interesting, too, that the Lucifer apparently is sort of a similar background to what our kind of classic devil is. Apparently, he's a fallen angel of some sort. And part of his deal is that he's teaming up with this religious guy so that he can get a chance at getting back into heaven.
That's right.
And he's got the black wings and everything. So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
neat.
That's true. With the feathers and stuff. So it's like the
yeah, and the violet eyes, which all like magical mystery and stuff like that. It is sort of funny though. Like he's like all like super like shows up all super cocky and like yeah, I can take these guys down. And, like they spill their plot, and like I think Mal's reaction is one of the best. Mal is just like sitting there like what. This is the stupidest thing. I figured that out. He spells their plot back out to them. He's like, no,
yeah,
this is like a B movie plot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, what? B movie?
The other part of the thing was Alessio, the general that traveled with him the whole time, he breaks in, like, wait, I know you're saying something really important, but when did you get time and money to go see a movie?
yeah, B movie. How did you? I've been sacrificing not having any fun. Yeah, and he's all shot, and he's like, just remember, see it at the first of the month. It's a discount time.
Yes. So good.
Yeah. It is kind of funny, though, and then when he shows back up after he gets healed, and this is like, oh, where were you? Like, well, I had to go back home and get my cape.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was perfect. He does look good in his cape, though, so, I mean, you can't blame a guy.
It's a nice refresher that the show, like, it never seems to lose its touch on what is making the show, like, really fun. Like, the characters' interactions are, like, priceless, and it's so good that those don't fade away when the action ramps up, as it were.
Yeah, this one was definitely... jumped in with the action.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested too. I can't remember, they showed for at least a split second some sort of form of what Lucifer looked like in the previous realm, and I know people have changed a little bit when they come over to our side of the portal.
Yeah,
but I do think it's funny that Lucifer ends up basically coming into our world looking like kind of a skater kid or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing I would say that kind of threw me off a little bit, just the when Amelia like went full on, like, you know, used her powers, like the way the previous episodes were kind of building of, you know, like, oh, you know, I've got some power, but I can't, like, you know, I can't use that much of it and stuff. And then when she kind of goes full on and transforms, it's like, I totally got it and I understood it. Just, it felt like it went from something kind of interesting to like, oh, here's your anime. Like it felt like that kind of familiar anime trope.
Like it was a very magical girl sort of a transformation, so that didn't help things.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, it's like, I totally got it. Like, it made sense. Like, okay, she needs to use her powers right now. But it kind of like, I lost some of that, like, it was neat.
It would have been kind of neat if she would have at least attempted to go after him with a little paring knife, like she did with the devil the first time.
Yeah. but yeah, and then now that like we kind of know, like, okay, this is how, although she, like, it hasn't really been explained if she can, if there's a way for her to get like powers, like if there's going to be some sort of opposite thing of like where, you know, Mao is like, oh, okay, I can feed off of despair and fear and stuff like that, like if there's going to be some sort of reverse for her, like if she'll find a way, or if she knows a way to get some power or something. Like right now they're kind of playing it like, nope, like this is all she's got. Like,
yeah, the priest guy was like, no, I'm using a gun because I don't want to use my magic.
Yeah, because I need to get back home if I don't. Like,
well, I kind of wonder if it's going to be something along the lines of not faith in like a normal religious sense, but faith as in she's bolstered by people believing in her, and since she isn't really in that position right now, that she can't really absorb energy that way.
Yeah.
And maybe it's something that she's never even really had to think about before, just because she was put in a position where so many people believed in her and basically had to count on her as their only savior. So it'll be interesting to see if they speak directly to it in the future.
All right, so shall we move on to episode 6?
Because as we talk, the discussion of gaining power, I think, is a good transition, because that's sort of the main through line of the next episode, where they're trying to find alternate sources of extra energy so they can get home, and also so that they can, you know, not be completely up a creek without their powers, so to speak.
Yeah,
I like too that by the end of the episode, Lucifer is beaten and not like killed. He's beaten to a pulp and kind of brought into the fold.
Yeah.
So he ends up being a good extra character to have. And actually he's the only character that I didn't realize was in like the opening lineup from the stuff. I hadn't noticed him on the far side of all of the base characters on the intro for the show.
Yeah.
So it took me by surprise to see him as a regular character.
Oh, we should also say at the end of the last episode, like, Amelia's friends show up.
Yes.
And then like take off after.
Yeah. Yeah, one of them does. Like the did the camera, did both of them leave? I thought it was just the little girl.
I think they both left.
Okay.
I think so. I don't remember the two of them sticking around for the next episode. If they did. Do you remember, Jason, if
I don't think they're around for the not for that episode.
Yeah, it looks like.
But basically, it seems like they have enough power to be able to vault between the two planes pretty easily, as long as they get back regularly. And so,
yeah,
that's
now
probably a big part of it.
Now that they sort of explain the earthquake thing and the sonar things, and that the signal was anyone thinking about Mao, like, a lot.
Yeah, and respond to this call effectively.
And of course, what's her name was, so
yeah,
she
makes
was the
a bit
one.
Of sense.
Yeah. So, but then episode 6 starts off back at the realm where they all came from, and there's a particular character like speaking with I'm assuming it's the church and kind of like they're.
Did we find it? Did we hear a name for that character at all or no?
I can't remember if they may have mentioned, but.
But yeah, I want to say like a blue haired, like female character done up in robes, like some sort of religious figure, some sort of leader of some sort.
And it kind of went into a little bit more of like, okay, well, what's going on a little bit? And like that kind of explaining like, oh, I think there's some, if memory serves, wasn't something like, oh, there's some sort of splinter group maybe, or something like something's going on within this. And then how can we stop it? And they're like, oh, well, what would be your idea or something like that? Like, because they show her like observing them while they're going to that sealed classroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I couldn't really tell if it was going to be that she's trying to navigate the problems that they discovered, or if she's secretly the problem and that she's just trying to use the actual problem to get more power to create more problems. What I didn't understand quite yet, so I'm sure that's going to become more clear.
I think she's the girl at the end of the episode that falls down catches.
That'd be interesting.
Because they, just going back to like their line of saying like, okay, what would you do? And she's observing them go through the classroom and she's observing like the interactions of that girl liking him and how he like treats them. So I'm thinking like this is her as a disguise.
It
like,
makes a lot of sense.
I could totally sneak in. Because
you already have sort of the blue hair, but this a little bit more like blue-black hair, but that would be more of a natural color for this side of the portal. And then everybody does seem to lose quite a bit of age every time they jump through too. So if she's already kind of young, that would make some sense.
Also, her first appearance, she's fairly shadowy and has a big hood on, so we never really got a really good look at her face.
Yeah. I do like their weakness is the picture from their landlord.
The landlady in a bikini in Hawaii.
Yeah. I just love it, though, too, when they're going to that sealed classroom and they're like, okay, we don't know if something comes out from the shadows. It's like, all right, we have this, like we have this to use against them. And he holds up the letter. We know it works on
it's
us.
Genius. Yeah.
to weaken us. So it'll work on them.
If it's a demon, it will definitely work against it. It was pretty choice.
He's like, oh, I found that on the floor when he goes back to work. It slips and falls and he picks it up. It's like,
classic.
Yeah. But yeah, to Jason mentioned too that Lucifer joins their fold. Mm-hmm. He becomes kind of their internet guy and gets, what's his name? Like, dang it. It's like Rishi, something like that. It's
which character? The
Lucifer become like, they change his name. Like everyone gets like a new name. It's like Risha or something. Like, I know it's,
It's Hanzo Urushihara.
Urushihara, that's right. But yeah, like, oh dang, I wish I could remember the playoff of Amazon on his website. That was like, oh crap, what was it called? Oh man, I should have written it down, but it was Jungle.
Yes.
You're like, oh, I think that's supposed to be Amazon. Kind of like McRonald's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of the play on words. They have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. But yeah, this one, and then like it's funny, you know, he basically takes over kind of the job that the general was doing of finding like the magical places and trying to find like more local areas.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, so they have to like travel to Egypt or
Turkey or something. Yeah. Ghost mentions like, oh, we can't afford a ticket to Turkey. It might be a good thing, but. Yeah, and then it turns out like, oh, he sends him to the place where he popped in.
Right.
Which
makes some sense.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
There's some energy in there
way,
or something.
Yeah, in a way, it's like, well, he did want to get his pasta, PlayStation Vita.
Yes.
I looked at that, I was like, pasta.
Yeah. But I liked how the little form of the writing was a little bit similar to you on it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like, you know, well, okay. It's, I mean, he'd send him to get that, but he does make sense. They did pop in there and explain if the, you know, it could pop open again, a portal, or, you know, they could still get some magic from there possibly. So
yeah, it's, and supposedly when you make a portal to from their world to ours, you get it, it weakens the location so that you can, it's easier to move back and forth between them once it's already there.
Yeah. Yeah, so be curious if they ever do use that one again for any.
I'm tempted to say it's going to be like the key to everything.
Yeah, I will be curious now that characters have popped back and forth, like how much that's going to happen more as the, because now we're kind of the halfway point sort of. So yeah. I'll be curious if that's going to start happening more, because Amelia decides to stay and Miles stays, and even though they have these opportunities to go back, they choose to stay here. And
yeah, I honestly, like, I get her reasoning, but I'm kind of surprised that Amelia wouldn't have taken the chance to go back and cross over in order to try and tidy things up on the other side, because it seems like she'd be able to single-handedly set all of the shenanigans straight.
Yeah.
But I mean, at this point, she's so invested in being on this side of the portal that maybe that's never going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
And also, it's very samurai to be devoted to the one, your one goal. And if keeping an eye on Mao is her one goal, then she's not going to deter from it, since she is effectively a samurai.
True. Good points. Any final thoughts, or shall we wrap up this week's watch party?
I think we can wrap it. I think we covered everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went a little bit out of order, since it does end with the girl popping up on the stairs that we have no idea who she is or anything.
Yeah, but that was such it's almost a throwaway moment in terms of like the pacing of the episode. So it's kind of like, yeah, you can kind of put the it was prescient to where we were discussing. So
plus it's the watch party. The idea is they're supposed to have watched it with us, so we're not really like going through an order isn't terribly necessary. It's you know, it's helpful for people who haven't watched it, but the idea is to watch it with us, so we can kind of have a easy, you know, a more comfortable conversation, or spacing on the word, but
it's spoiler free if you've seen it already.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week's watch party. So we'll be back next Monday with episodes 7 and 8. Am I right?
Yep, that's
Is math working for me? All right. Yeah, we're getting close, because it's 13, right? 13 episodes. So. And again, it's not too late to join us. They're really short episodes, like 20, 23 minutes, something like that. So,
yeah, and especially if you want to just outright catch up. It's been a pretty rewarding show so far.
Yeah.
Easily better than I think any of us expected it to be.
Yeah, yeah. Good blend of some action and humor and stuff like that. But so, yeah.
One final thought. I do love that the devil's like ultimate form is sort of like straight out of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, with like the coloring and stuff on it, and the shadowing. I'm like, that's so funny.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is funny. He's like, yeah, he's all the muscles and everything like that.
Yeah, he's shredded.
Oh yeah. All right, that'll do it for the watch party. We'll take another music break and then come back with some new releases and of course the news. All right, you're listening to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
All right, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. This will sound weird, but like the end that plugs into the wall, is it male or female?
That would be female.
Okay. So, yeah, might be able to plug it in one of those. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out if we're going to need to bring another mic for next week, and, you know, hopefully not. But
yeah, hopefully not.
Speaking of things that are coming out this week, we've got in the theater earlier in the show, Caleb introduced you to Deadpool, and you may be wondering, well, why are you talking about Deadpool? Well, that's because Deadpool is coming out this week in the theater. It's based upon the Marvel Comics anti-hero Deadpool is the origin story of former Special Forces operative turned mercenary Wade Wilson, who after being subjected to a rogue experiment that leaves him with accelerated healing powers, adopts the alter ego Deadpool. Armed with new abilities and a dark and twisted sense of humor, Deadpool hunts down the man who nearly destroyed his life. Then we have How to Be Single. It's a right way to be single, a wrong way to be single, and then ... there's Alice. And Robin, Lucy, Meg, Tom, David, New York City is full of lonely hearts seeking the right match, be it a love connection, a hookup, or something in the middle. And somewhere between the teasing texts and one-night stands, what these unmarrieds all have in common is the need to learn how to be single in a world filled with ever-evolving definitions of love. Sleeping around in the city that never sleeps was never so much fun. Then we have a sequel to a movie you may not have expected ever happening, but it is Zoolander 2. Derek and Hansel are modeling again when an opposing company attempts to take them out of the business.
What?
Then we have Mountains May Depart, at once an intimate drama and a decade-spanning epic that leaps from the recent past to the present to the speculative near future. Jia Zhangyi's new film is an intensely moving study of how China's economic boom and the culture of materialism it has spawned has affected the bonds of family, tradition, and love.
All right, moving over to Blu-rays and DVDs. There's 99 Homes on Blu-ray and DVD. A young father goes to work for the ruthless real estate broker who got him evicted from his house. Cribs and Peak on Blu-ray and DVD. An aspiring author is drawn into a weird, dark family when she is wooed by a charming but mysterious aristocrat. Then things only get stranger when she moves into the family home and meets her sister-in-law. Spectre on Blu-ray and DVD. Bond returns to take on a global threat. Again. While maybe not the most successful Bond film, it does have its good points. Then.
Did you ever see Spectre?
I have actually not seen it yet.
Yeah, me neither. Did you see it, Jason?
I haven't yet.
Mm.
Maybe we'll catch it on Blu-ray or DVD. And wrapping it up is Welcome to Leith. In a story where truth is more fantastic than fiction, the unassuming town of Leith is almost overtaken by a white supremacist. Leith is a population of 29 when the film was made.
Okay, next up we have The Wonderful World of Video Games. First up we have Firewatch coming tomorrow for PC, Mac, Linux, and PS4. It basically looks like an incredibly beautiful kind of impressionistic look at a first-person video game of a firefighter trying to reason through a bunch of small mysteries. Next up, we have Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia, also coming out tomorrow for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. This one is a little bit different take than the other Chronicles Assassin's Creed series, just because it has an art style that very much fits with the time and place that Russia is in when we're playing this game. Basically, if you've ever seen any of the kind of dramatic posters of Soviet Russia rising, it's trying to pull off that style. It's basically black and white with all of the high points being expressed in red. It's also the end of the Chronicles series, so if you wish to get it, you can also get it in a 3-pack that includes all of them. Next up, we have Unravel, also coming out tomorrow. Everything's coming out tomorrow. On PS4, Xbox One, and PC. That caught me off guard. I saw it billed as an Xbox One thing so often, it ended up throwing me off seeing it for other stuff. The reviews for it look like it's pretty solid as far as all of the emotional side of things and artistic side. It might not satisfy you on all of the puzzle and platforming sides, but it still looks like everybody considers it a worthy addition to the platforming genre. And finally, we have something that I'm still confused because apparently came out both this week and last week. Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 4. This one is actually pretty interesting because it should be the end of the series, and it includes the final fights between Naruto and Sasuke with their final forms of combat, and includes the youngins from the new series that's currently out with Boruto, I believe is the name of Naruto's son. So
I tried the demo and I was like, yep, this is why I'm not a fighter player. I was like, I don't know how to do any of this stuff.
Well, it's funny, like those games, I'm not sure most fighter players even consider it a fighter. It's more like it's very much like the DBZ games. It's fun to watch if you pull things off.
Speaking of fun things to watch, the Tapper Theater Company at Theater on San Pedro Square presents I Do, I Do. This charming two-character musical production provides a humorously insightful look at the ups and downs in a 50-year marriage and runs February 12th through 28th. Marriage or musical, this would be it. For more information, call 408-679-2330 or visit tappertheater.org.
Alrighty. And now we move into the wonderful world of comics. From DC, it's Batman number 49. Bruce must come to terms with who he is and who is the Bat. He must also face if he can live as both, or must one die so the other can live. Then at Marvel, it's Old Man Logan number 2. In the future, the Hulks are a law unto themselves. In the current time in which Logan finds himself, as an opportunity to put an end to that tyranny once and for all, starting with the Totally Awesome Hulk, otherwise known as Amadeus Cho. From Dark Horse, it's Harrow Country number 9. The skinless boy is a mystery to Emmy, and he is her capable protector. In a chance encounter where he is reunited with his old skin and has an opportunity to explore who he was. From Image, it's Descender number 10. The mysteries of the machine moon are explored and a new group rises, the Between. And then from IDW, it's Gem and the Holograms, Valentine's Day Special 2016 number 1. It's a dual headliner tour for Gem and the Holograms and the Misfits. While tensions are high, Synergy has a trick up its sleeve, a new tune that turns enemies into friends. But can they deal with the consequences? And our fine friends at Wow Cool have a few good choices as well you might want to check out. There's the Ellingtonville Fight Club hardcover from Dark Horse, Jonesy number 1 from Boom, Gnawed Away, a graphic novel from the Fantagraphics company. Then there's Comics Dementia, a Love and Rockets book, and Love and Rockets News Stories number 8.
All right, I'll finish this off with some music. We've got Hidden City by The Cult. It's the 10th full-length studio release for the British rock band. It was produced by Bob Rock. We have Everybody's Dying to Meet You by Flowers, the second full-length release for the British indie pop trio. It was produced by Brian O'Shaughnessy. My Wild West by Lessie, the third full-length release for the singer-songwriter. Was inspired in part by her life in California. She has since moved to a farm in Iowa. And then we have Good Advice by Basia Bolat, the fourth full-length release for the Canadian singer-songwriter, was produced by Jim James. All right, that's some new releases. We'll take a quick music break and then come back with the news. Let's tease them some news.
How about full Amiibo support for the next Tekken venture?
Okay.
From hoverboards to Hyperloop.
Ooh, all right. We'll be back with the news right after this with more Robots Attack here on KCU, Santa Clara.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack here on KCU, Santa Clara. We are now on the news. Let's news them.
Okay, first off, If you haven't heard already, they're actually making a weird combination of Pokemon and Tekken Tournament. it actually already exists in arcades in Japan and is looking to come stateside to the Wii U on the 18th of March. So we're getting all of the little details of it rolling in, which are all pretty interesting and odd, fitting for what it is. And of course, the big thing that everybody was wondering was what sort of support the amiibos were going to have with the Wii U for this game, since it doesn't really kind of apply to a lot of the stuff for it. Apparently, Nintendo, according to their website, is going to have full amiibo support for the game, which means that every single amiibo should do something within the game.
Wow.
Most likely, this is going to be some sort of unlock. If you're familiar with the previous Tekken games, they've been getting more and more into customization. And that would kind of make sense if you maybe throw on a Mario amiibo and you can throw a Mario mustache on a Pokemon of your choice. Possibly. We don't know. But so far, that is the most likely idea. But yeah.
Well, still Pokemon and Tekken. Who would have thought that?
Apparently, people really love it. So I can see some possibilities there. It does have kind of a limited roster compared to the crazy number of Pokemon that exist these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, people have been pretty surprised by some of the Pokemon that have been included, including one that looks like a chandelier.
Huh. Yeah. Well, here's something that won't surprise you at all. If you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound.
Very true. And
the pro tip.
The pro tip is you can find us faster by searching for our call letters, KSCU. Those are unique to us on the globe. And moving on to from hoverboards to the wonderful world of the SpaceX, Elon Musk's other idea is the Hyperloop. The company known as ARXPAX, ARXPAX, they made the Hendo hoverboard, which was widely regarded as the one quote-unquote true hoverboard, the one that actually creates a magnetic field and floats without having to be superconductive, and it's the one that you need a metal floor to work with, but
okay, you
know, so it goes. The electromotor technology that they have created is now all being considered as a way to lift the containers and the pods for the Hyperloop transit system, which, like, the in case you don't remember, the basic premise is there. You seal a tube, create a slight pressure differential, and you move an object from one place to the next in a nearly frictionless way, and so therefore you get it from one place to the other really, really, really quickly. Now, the other benefit is that if you can find a inexpensive and easy way to lift the object into the center of the tube, you will, which reduces friction even further, now you have potentially a very inexpensive, very, very high speed means of transit. It looks like the early premise is to move cargo as opposed to people.
Oh, okay.
So, but the thing that gets me about the design of these things, they look suspiciously like the hover generators from the Matrix movies.
Oh.
I'm like, I know it's not the same, but that's getting suspiciously close to things I've seen before. And it's a really cool idea, and I wish them the best. There's a bunch of other teams competing for the best design of the Hyperloop, and they will build a number of them and test them this summer at a 1 mile test track out in Texas.
Oh, wow. Hmm. All right. My story involves crows. And you know that term, you know, murder of crows and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Someone is dead. There's a body, attended by a number of concealed and watchful figures, all in black. The lifeless corpse belongs to a crow, and the dark-garbed group congregating nearby is a gathering of its fellow crows, sometimes referred to as a murder. That name is particularly apt in this case, as murder is what holds their attention. Their vigilance over a dead crow serves a purpose, one that's a matter of life and death, according to a new study in the journal Animal Behavior. By sticking close to a crow that was killed, other crows may improve their chances of learning about predators they need to avoid. Human rituals for dealing with the dead are numerous and varied, but animals in the wild are not widely known to behave in an unusual way when confronting a dead animal of their own species. In fact, the researchers said in the study, few animals have been reported to show more than a passing interest. African elephants will touch, groom, or otherwise attend to a dead elephant, and scientists have noted similar behavior in bottlenose dolphins, chimpanzees, and certain species of jays and magpies, the researchers reported. And for birds in particular, a growing body of evidence suggests that their interactions with dead members of their own species serve a critical purpose, quote, to assess danger and trigger anti-predator behaviors, the scientists said in the study. Crows are widely recognized as highly intelligent. They can solve puzzles inspired by Aesop's fables and learn how to use tools by watching more experienced crows in action. Studies have shown that crows hold grudges, remembering the faces of humans who mistreated them even after years have passed. So watch out. And once
do not cross that crow.
Yeah. Once you get in the wrong side of crow, not only are they probably going to remember you, but they're likely to tell their friends about you too. The scientists cite an earlier study showing that American crows gather and act aggressively, behavior known as mobbing, in response to audio playback of a crow's distress call played near a dead crow, and the crows later avoided the territories where dead crows have been found, even those locations had plenty of food.
That is fascinating.
Yeah. Clearly, crows could learn to be wary of areas where their fellow crows turned up dead. The researchers wanted to know if they would also learn to associate dead crows and threats to themselves with specific predators. The researchers went to great lengths to design the threats they used to test the crows. They set up feeding areas for urban wild crows and sent trained volunteers to visit, carrying different objects that were carefully selected to test the crows' alarm responses. Taxidermy crows arranged in poses suggesting that they were dead, and taxidermy red-tailed hawks, which prey on crows, posed on a branch as though they were still alive. And then volunteers would visit the feeding site areas. Sometimes they would carry the dead crow. Sometimes they would carry the live hawk. And sometimes they would carry both at the same time to make things easier for the researchers and more surreal for passersby. The volunteers were masked, eliminating the possibility that variations in their expressions would affect the crow's responses. The crows reacted by vocally scolding and mobbing the volunteers carrying the dead crows, the posed hawks, and the two taxidermy birds at the same time. After one of these encounters, the crows also appeared more watchful of the feeding area, taking longer to approach the food. The crows also appeared to remember the mask worn by the volunteers who held the dead birds. Even if a mask wearer only carried a dead crow once, the crows continued to scold that person whenever they appeared for up to 6 weeks.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Scientists conducted similar tests with another urban bird, the rock pigeon, and observed that they hardly even noticed when a dead pigeon was paraded in front of them, in a dramatic contrast to the organized and negative reaction of the crows to the sight of a fallen comrade. And the crows were similarly unconcerned about the presence of a dead pigeon, reserving their scolding and mobbing for humans occupying dead crows and suspected predators. The study's results suggest that not only do crows notice and react to the sight of a dead crow, but they also quickly learn to associate danger and threat with humans who appear in close proximity to dead crows, recognizing them as a distinct and different cause for alarm. So, watch out, man. They know. They know.
Yeah, seriously.
The crow knows.
For up to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I'm sure you guys are all familiar at this point with a little something called Humble Bundle. Of course, it got its start, I believe, with books, right?
I think the Humble Bundle started with games. That's the when I first heard about it.
Okay. Well, anyway, ended up spreading between games and books, and it spread into a new interesting direction, and that is the Humble Games. Anybody? Anyway. So, they've started up a fee-based monthly service that is still under the Humble Bundle moniker, but it's already amassed about 70,000 subscribers, which is pretty impressive, but given that everybody seems to be pretty happy with the way the entire thing works so far, it makes sense that it would get popular pretty quickly. The next thing that's kind of interesting thing about, or next interesting thing about it, is that Humble Bundle, because of this, is actually starting to make their own games, GameStop, which we talked about last week. So they're leveraging the money off of these subscribers and actually funding studios for games exclusive to this service. The first of which is going to be one from a studio called Mighty Rabbit Studios, and the game is going to be called Elephant in the Room. It's going to be the very first release out of this, and it'll be pretty neat to see if it ends up becoming a pretty big distributor of games in the future, or distributor of their own games, I should say.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that they're kind of bouncing the from putting together other people's games to now, like, using that revenue to and go, hey, we could maybe make our own games.
Yeah, and you'd know there's plenty of people out there trying to get their stuff seen as it is.
So. Yeah, and that's a recognizable name to get it attached to. So
yeah, it's a pretty easy way to get some clout pretty quick.
Alrighty, so from humble beginnings to the exquisiteness of the stars. We've mentioned KIC 8462852 before.
We
not
did
KFC, right?
No, not KFC. KIC. That is the now somewhat infamous star, which may and or may not have a Dyson sphere around it.
Mm.
Hey, that's my story. What are you doing?
You brought up the first story. I'm bringing up the follow up. Because this star, which is sometimes referred to as the Calico Star because of the mottled patterning of light coming off of it.
Okay.
They have not ruled out the Dyson Sphere, but the Dyson Sphere is still pretty low on the possibilities of actual what it actually is. But they know they need to figure out what it actually is, and you need a plan to figure that out. So they're spending a lot more time trying to get extra data out of the Kepler viewing of it, which is the Kepler system is designed to detect the almost microscopic or the very minuscule changes in light as an object transits in front of or behind a star. It's the same system we've been using to find a number of the exoplanets that have been cropping up recently. This is the same system. So they're looking into the spectrum of light, exactly how much and how often the light is shifting, and just they're putting together a concerted effort to figure out exactly what's going on, because it doesn't make any sense why the pattern of light would be so consistently shifting the way it is.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, yes, the Dyson Sphere is a really cool idea. Unlikely, but what do we have? Because while it may not be the Dyson Sphere of our dreams, it will probably still be exceptionally interesting to find out what exactly is going on with that. Is it a star with its own asteroid belt? Is it what sort of objects would be surrounding a star of this? Like this, creating this magnitude of shifting in its light, because in order to be detected at this distance, it's got to be at least fairly, it's going to be fairly significant. That's why we can, that's why it's used to find planets,
okay,
which are not necessarily small by comparison. So it's really exciting. More space science.
Well, we know one thing though, for certain, it sucks.
How so?
The Dyson sphere. It sucks.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Get it.
It sucks all the way around. It never stops sucking.
No.
Never stops losing suction.
There you go. good night, everybody. No, I'm kidding. Okay, we got more good stories after that. We promise.
Yes, like this one. No, it might
about
be
about Dyson vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. No, it's about this might be odd seeing as I'm you know, not a huge fan of spiders. I'm glad they exist. They serve an excellent purpose, but
they got mosquitoes.
Yes. But I prefer them over there.
They create superheroes.
And me over here, exactly. Well, it looks like a superhero to some, quote unquote, got a spider named after him. Johnny Cash just got a spider named after him.
Whoa.
Yep. Biologists have discovered 14 new species of U.S. tarantula, which is terrifying news for those of us that thought tarantulas were of a single genus. And that was already more than enough. That's 14 new ones, huh? Oh, boy.
Whee!
Well, it doesn't mean there's more of them. It's just there's a wider variety.
True.
Now you have 14 more ways to think about how those are creepy.
Yeah.
Now they have color schemes.
Oh, boy.
Customizations. That one's got a bow on it.
Just wait until the amiibos start taking effect.
Oh, no. Well, Chris Hamilton, a postdoctoral researcher at the Florida Museum of Natural History, and two other scientists have spent more than 10 years attempting to clean up the tarantula's Anthonopelma taxonomy. The team discovered one particularly black species in the foothills of the Western Sahara Nevada Mountains, a region best known for housing the infamous Folsom Prison.
Dun, dun, dun.
It wasn't a stretch of the imagination then to name the newly discovered spider after the Man in Black, who famously played a concert at the same prison in 1968. Quote, "It's a perfect name. It fits the spider. It's found around Folsom, and the males are predominantly all black. So it fits his image," Hamilton told BBC. Quote, "I have a Johnny Cash tattoo, so I was very happy that it worked out that way."
Now I have a Johnny Cash spider tattoo.
Yeah.
Right along
with
it.
Get the spider, like... Cash isn't the...
It's surfing on a ring of fire.
There you go. And then have the Folsom Prison somehow or something, like busting out of it or something.
Folsom Prison, otherwise known as the Ring of Fire.
But yeah, there you go. Cash isn't the first iconic singer to get a spider named after him. In 2014, John Lennon became the namesake of Bumba Leone.
Just like him.
Yep. A species of tarantula native to Brazil. Likewise, David Bowie got his... Heteropoda David Bowie in 2009.
That one's a little bit easier, yeah.
The article has a picture that you can check out of Cash's eight-legged friend.
Does the Bowie one have like a lightning bolt on its back? Or
I don't know. You'll have to look it up. That's something you can do out there, listeners, and let us know. You can tweet us a picture so we can see it.
Yeah, or a link to the article, and you can... send those our way by going to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. Those will be excellent ways to get in touch with us and show us the cool things that you have found around the internet.
Okay, next story up, we have maybe for some people the most disappointing way to use the new and incredible F-35. I'm sort of joking because a lot of people aren't happy with it so far. But basically the idea behind this Joint Strike Fighter is that it can do practically anything that you can shake a stick at. It has modest stealth capabilities. You can rig it up a certain way so that it can jump and land, or land and take off directly vertical. You can rig it up with as many explosives as you want. Well, within reason. But unfortunately, all of these different things kind of pull at each other and don't really work necessarily perfectly with each other. So you end up, by some views, having kind of a watered-down aircraft. Well, the newest way that the military is actually looking at using these things is just completely vanilla with nothing on them. And it basically would allow them to use the stealth capabilities that wouldn't be compromised by any extra armaments to just do scouting missions, and that's it. And so it ends up being a not-so Top Gun-ish sort of role for the people in these fighters, but it does allow them a certain amount of safety as they're looking for targets and allows them to do something kind of interesting. Right now, the military is looking at using these types of scouts as basically just laser pointers for other aircraft to shoot missiles from even larger distances. And so right now they're looking at creating a class of airplanes called arsenal planes that would basically be the gunships that fire the missiles for these scouts. And the idea is that you can take older military aircraft that have been kind of relegated to the side because they're not needed as much because of Cold War not being a thing anymore. And other aircraft that are very much still a thing, like the AC-130, which if anybody is familiar with the Modern Warfare Call of Duty games, you're probably a little bit slack-jawed by the amount of firepower that thing already has on it. But the idea is also to throw some missiles on this thing so it can act as a missile boat for these scouts.
Just what it needs, one more way to rain down fire upon the enemy.
Yeah, the howitzer wasn't enough. Okay, the most exciting part about it to me is that it would end up resurrecting a bomber that really quickly lost its way or lost its value after the Cold War ended, and that is the B-1 bomber, not the B-2, the stealth bomber, but the B-1, in my view, the coolest looking airplane that has ever graced the sky. It basically is a very fast but low payload aircraft that it would be allowed to stock up with missiles and be able to fire them at their targets from these scout missions really quickly and easily and be back on the ground before anybody would have a chance to even shoot at them. So it might end up being a kind of interesting bit of synergy with brand new and more aged aircraft that haven't necessarily gotten their day in the sun because they didn't really have a use other than scaring people with nuclear weapons.
All right, I'll give us our last PSA of the night. It's an oldie. Project Sentinel.
Oh, nice.
Does your landlord tell you that your children cannot play outside? If so, you have experienced housing discrimination. Children have the same rights as adults. More information is available by calling Project Sentinel at 888-324-7468. Project Sentinel. All
right, so we go from fear and of the Cold War to the sort of the odd effects of fear in certain ways, mostly because if fear gets pushed far enough, one loses the ability to, or if one loses the ability to determine reality from fiction, fear would definitely be a problem, which is where schizophrenia has its deepest, darkest hooks, is that when one cannot determine what is real and what is not, which is partly why the paranoia partly runs in close parallel with it. And while we know of the phrase, we know generally what it means, where does it come from, and furthermore, what would could or should one do to avoid it, or can we start treating it sooner so that it does not reach the point where a person no longer is able to function or requires much more attention to function. And a new study of the genome shows there may be a genetic link to schizophrenia that may give us a look into its source, into its origins, and hopefully into a treatment of that, because we know sort of where it comes from, the paper was recently released talking about the research into what the markers of this disease are on the genome and where we can find them and they test of over 65,000 individuals, and so in order to find the exact markers that will hopefully lead us into the actual they found that it affects a certain neural synapse system.
Okay.
And when the information does not transit along that correctly, it starts to create it breaks down the communication between one part of the brain and the other, which then begins to devolve the amount of information that one receives and leads into the blending of fantasy and reality. And
man, that'd be
it's really difficult to try and imagine, and if you can't imagine it, it'd be a really hard place to try and live a life. And it's small wonder that it's one of the more debilitating mental health issues. And it's exciting that we are finding ways of looking into it more deeply so that we can hopefully help the people, those that suffer from it, find a new place in
yeah, because you'd have to think, like, when you had those kinds of feelings, like, you'd have to go back to, like, when you were, like, a little kid, you know, when it was, like, obviously now you're like, okay, you know, so like that horror movie or whatever you watch, like, that's not real. Like, no, that's
right.
Like, there's no monster in my closet. There's no this or that. But so kind of having to go think all the way back to then, like, those feelings, like, and then trying to imagine now, like, a grown up or someone, you know, like, still, I mean, I'm sure it's not exactly like that, but just trying to relate it in some way of just like, man, just not having that ability to be like, no, that's not real. Like, this is real.
Yeah.
Quote unquote. Just, man, that would be, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why those people that are afflicted with this are unpredictable, because, you know, how do you deal with that and determine it in your own mind, when your own mind is giving you conflicting information?
Yeah, if you can't trust your own mind, who can you trust?
Seriously.
All right. So, shall I wrap us up with this day in history, or does anyone else have anything they want to discuss before we wrap us up with them?
No, I think we're good.
Moments. All right. So, this day in history, in February 8th, it is the 8th, correct? All right.
Yes.
In 1861, Jefferson Davis was chosen as the president of the Confederate States of America. Then in 1943, the Battle of Guadalcanal ended with an American victory. Guadalcanal. There we go. Thank you. It's like, wait, I know that. That's what it is.
I like it because it's waddle with a gua.
Then we jump to 1950. Senator Joseph McCarthy claimed he had evidence there were card-carrying members of the Communist Party in the State Department.
Dun, dun, dun.
Then in 1964, the Beatles made their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. Then in 1991...
Or did they?
Whoa. I want to believe. Then in 1991, Lithuanians voted overwhelmingly for independence from the Soviet Union. Then in 2001... Oh, if only we had the... there we go. Nice. A U.S. nuclear sub struck the... Imimaru, a Japanese fishing boat.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's not nearly as entertaining as the other Maru that's on the internet right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's so small and fuzzy. Look at his little fuzzy face.
Look at him run into a submarine.
Oh, jeez.
What? I mean, in a playful way. It's like a stuffed toy submarine, I'm sure.
Well, and on that note, that's going to do it for this week's Robots Attack. You know, just because it's the end of the show, it doesn't mean you still can't participate. Caleb, how can they do that?
If you think you... If there's something you thought of that we didn't cover or that you think that we should cover in the future, or you just want to tell us what you think, go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. Those are almost always active, and as long as the internet's up, they're available. And if you're thinking, wait, that's two places, why do I need two? I just want one place. If you want just one place, go to robotsattack.me. That is our own website. We post the shows there. We post archives of the show there. So if you want to go back, you want to catch up on our thoughts, you're going through Devil's Part-Timer, you want to hear our thoughts as we go through it, you can catch up real quick. You can watch our past watch parties. Leave comments, enjoy the stories, share it with your friends. It's awesome.
That's right. All right. On behalf of myself, Caleb, and Jason, we want to thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and we will catch you later. Take it easy, everybody.
Raccoon. Baranin. Mistel.